Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take your curiosity, a stack of fascinating sources, and turn them into those indispensable aha moments. Today, we're plunging into something, well, it's often underestimated, yet it's this incredibly powerful force. It dictates pretty much everything from innovation to employee happiness in an organization, its culture. You can think of it as the invisible operating system running underneath every company, big or small. You know, we often hear about companies succeeding or failing because of, say, their product or market or strategy. But what if the real story, the true differentiator, lies in something far more subtle? Our mission today is really to pull back the curtain on organizational culture. We want to understand what it actually is, what builds it, what maybe breaks it, and why, you know, truly getting a handle on its dynamics is critical for anyone trying to navigate the modern workplace or lead a team or even just understand the business world around them. We've really pulled together some insightful material here.
Indeed. And it's easy to just dismiss culture as like a fluffy HR term, right? Yeah. But our sources show it's anything but. It's essentially the DNA of an organization. Those shared values, beliefs, practices. They shape how people behave and interact, even when nobody's looking. For you, this deep dive will offer a powerful lens to see beyond a company's balance sheet or its product line. It helps you understand why some businesses thrive while others falter, often despite having similar resources. It's about seeing those hidden currents.
Okay, so let's cut through the buzzwords then. If we're talking about the DNA or the operating system of a company, what is organizational culture at its core? Our material basically defines it as the collective way things are done around here. It's that unwritten rule book, the shared assumptions and norms that guide how individuals and groups behave. It really is the personality or character of a business.
Yeah, and what's truly fascinating is how this collective personality isn't just about how people feel. It profoundly influences employee motivation, shapes every single decision, impacts productivity, and critically, it determines a firm's ability to adapt to change. It's not just the policies written down on paper, you see. It's more like the air people breathe there, the shared understanding of what's okay, what's celebrated, and maybe what's quietly discouraged.
That brings us to a crucial point. Why should you, our listener, really care whether a culture is strong or weak? Like, beyond the definitions, what are the real-world stakes? The research we've gathered really emphasizes these compelling benefits of having a robust organizational culture. It doesn't just create a clear identity, it gives employees a sense of purpose, helping them connect with the bigger picture, the vision. This kind of environment boosts morale and motivation because people feel like they're part of something larger than just themselves, right? And that fosters real loyalty.
Exactly. And that consistency you just mentioned, that's key. A strong culture brings predictability, stability to behaviors and decisions. Now, that might sound a bit mundane, but it translates directly into improved performance, more cohesive teamwork, and often a significant competitive advantage.
Yeah.
Think about companies known for, I don't know, their innovative spirit or maybe exceptional customer service. That's often a direct reflection of a powerful, intentional culture at work.
So the flip side must be just as impactful then. What happens when that immune system, as you put it earlier, isn't so strong?
Precisely. A weak or fragmented or sometimes even a toxic culture. Well, it's basically a recipe for disaster. Our sources point to a whole list of problems: rampant poor communication, a profound lack of trust among employees, sometimes shockingly high turnover rates, and persistent internal conflict. It's like an organism battling itself from within, constantly susceptible to issues that can cripple its function and, you know, ultimately its survival. Which, of course, raises an even more fundamental question. How are these powerful, sometimes fragile cultures actually formed?
Here's where it really got interesting for me. I was struck by how our sources break down the key ingredients that mold a company's personality into this really handy framework. We can call it normsate. It gives us a great way to remember the determinants. Okay, so first up in normsate is the end, the nature of the business. This isn't just about what the company does, but its core mission, its aims and objectives. These seem to significantly influence the entire cultural fabric.
Exactly right. Consider the inherent difference. Take an NGO, right?
Yeah.
By its very mission, it often cultivates a culture focused on service, community impact, collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
So values like empathy and shared purpose are really central. Now compare that to, say, a high-growth tech startup. Also profit-driven, sure, but maybe emphasizing rapid innovation, risk-taking, agility. Or think about a well-established manufacturing firm. Again, profit-driven, but perhaps focusing more on precision, safety, efficiency. So even within that profit-driven category, the fundamental nature of a work creates really distinct cultural imprints.
Okay, then we have organizational structure. This is all about how the company is designed, you know, the lines of authority, and it profoundly shapes how people interact day to day.
Absolutely. Think about it. A flat structure, With fewer layers of management, it tends to promote more direct communication, teamwork, and it empowers employees to make decisions more autonomously. It kind of signals that everyone is accessible. Conversely, a tall hierarchical structure, the kind with many management tiers, well, it can inadvertently foster those departmental silos, bureaucracy, and a culture where decisions are centralized and roles are really rigidly defined. That often leads to a slower flow of information and maybe a wait for instructions mentality.
Right. The third element, R, is rewards. Now, this covers how employees are compensated, yes, but also how they're recognized, how they're celebrated for their contributions.
Yeah, and this is so much more than just the paycheck. Fair, transparent, and motivating reward systems are crucial. They foster unity, loyalty, a sense of being valued. But if the compensation is seen as poor, or if there's just a lack of genuine recognition for effort and contribution, it can very quickly lead to disengagement, cynicism, and ultimately high turnover rates. People will just seek environments where the contributions feel appreciated. It impacts that intrinsic motivation just as much as the extrinsic stuff.
Makes sense. Next, M, we dive into management styles. The way leaders actually lead seems to have a direct, profound impact on the culture they cultivate.
Oh, definitely. This is where the tone at the top truly shows itself. Decentralized leadership, where authority is distributed and employees are encouraged to take initiative, that tends to cultivate a culture of autonomy, problem solving, and trust. People feel empowered. On the other hand, a highly centralized or even autocratic management style can unfortunately breed compliance, a dependency on managers for every little decision, and sometimes even a blame culture where people are just afraid to make mistakes. And that obviously stifles innovation and open communication.
And finally, S, we arrive at sanctions. These are the rules, both the formal ones and the informal ones, and the consequences for breaking them. It's kind of the enforcement arm of the culture.
It's a very delicate balance, isn't it? If the rules are overly harsh or rigid, it can create resentment, fear, maybe a work-to-rule mentality where people just do the bare minimum to avoid getting in trouble. It definitely stifles creativity. Yet, if you have too few sanctions or maybe inconsistent enforcement, that can swing the pendulum the other way. It can lead to carelessness, a lack of accountability, and just a general erosion of standards where quality slips, deadlines get missed. It really signals what the organization truly values, regardless of what's written down.
That Norm SA framework gives us a really practical lens, I think. But beyond the factors that shape culture, our sources introduce this fascinating way to categorize the types of cultures you might actually encounter. It's thanks to Charles Handy's Gods of Management model. He identifies four main types, named metaphorically after Greek gods, each with distinct characteristics. It offers such vivid archetypes.
It really does. Charles Handy, he was a real pioneer in management thinking, and he developed this model to help us understand these deep-seated characteristics of organizations.
Mm.
But the real insight, I think, isn't just knowing these types exist. It's recognizing that many companies unintentionally embody elements of multiple gods, and that can lead to internal friction. For instance, you might have a growing startup. Still has that Zeus-like founder trying to maintain control.
Right.
Well, maybe the mid-level managers are already trying to implement more Apollo-like processes. That creates this constant tug of war that just drains energy.
Okay, let's unpack them. Starting with the power culture, which Handy likens to Zeus. My take is that this is where, like, a single dominant individual or maybe a very small group holds all the cards. Decision-making is incredibly quick here.
That's right. The advantage of this Zeus-like culture is definitely its agility, fast responses to changes, clear control. That can be immensely effective during a crisis or maybe in an early entrepreneurial startup phase. The downside, however, is that it can easily become autocratic, often stifling individual initiative. Employees might feel disempowered or unmotivated because their ideas don't carry much weight, and the whole thing is highly dependent on that central figure. If Zeus leaves, the company often struggles to find its footing.
Next is the role culture, symbolized by Apollo. This sounds like the absolute epitome of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Clearly defined job roles, authority levels. The focus here seems to be purely on stability and consistency.
Yeah. Role cultures thrive on predictability and order. They're highly efficient in stable environments. They offer clear expectations, established procedures for everything. You could think of it like a well-oiled machine. But, and this is a significant drawback, their inflexibility can be a massive liability. They're often very resistant to innovation, and they struggle immensely to adapt when market conditions or customer demands shift rapidly. If Apollo ran a modern tech company, it might still be debating whether to adopt cloud computing.
That makes sense. Moving on, we have the task culture associated with Athena. Now, this culture seems very different, much more team and project-oriented, with a strong focus on solving specific problems. It sounds designed to be flexible, adaptive.
Exactly. The advantages of an Athena culture are pretty clear. It fosters innovation, encourages collaboration, and it's highly responsive to new challenges. It's ideal for complex, dynamic projects where you need diverse expertise. The flip side, though, is that because it's so project-driven and fluid, conflict can sometimes bubble up over resource allocation or team leadership or even just the best approach to solve a problem.
Yeah.
It could potentially lead to that too many cooks in the kitchen scenario if it's not managed well.
And finally, there's the person culture, represented by Dionysus. This one sounds like the ultimate individualist culture, where the organization exists primarily to serve its members. I sort of imagine this in places like highly specialized law firms or maybe consultancy partnerships.
You've got it. This culture champions freedom, autonomy, individual empowerment, and that can be incredibly fulfilling for its highly skilled members. It really values individual expertise above almost any collective identity. However, that level of autonomy can also be its downfall. It often suffers from a lack of clear organizational direction. It makes it genuinely difficult to achieve common overarching goals when everyone is primarily focused on their own professional development or their own client work. I remember a consultancy project, actually, where a person culture client resisted using any standardized project management tool. Every consultant preferred their own system. And while it championed their autonomy, it created utter chaos for resource allocation, a classic Dionysian dilemma. So if we connect this back to the bigger picture, you can likely recognize elements of these gods and companies you've worked for, or maybe you just encountered. This framework helps you understand not just what a culture looks like, but its inherent strengths and weaknesses too, and why certain organizational setups might flourish or fail in specific environments.
Okay, so we have these distinct cultural personalities shaped by those normesse factors.
Yeah.
But what happens when these powerful forces actually come into conflict? Or maybe when a company's aspirational culture, what they say they are, isn't what's actually happening on the ground. Our sources describe this as a cultural clash when two or more cultures within an organization come into conflict. And then there's also the culture gap, which is the difference between the desired culture and the existing reality. Both sound like a recipe for internal chaos. Our sources identify several key scenarios that often trigger these clashes. One major one is just the growth of firms. How does simply expanding lead to cultural friction?
Well, it's a natural evolution in many ways, but often a painful one. Small firms often thrive on these informal, close-knit cultures where everyone knows everyone, right? But as they grow, they inevitably have to formalize. That leads to more structured processes, hierarchy, and potentially a shift towards more of a role or even a power culture. That initial spontaneity gets lost. Plus, when a company expands geographically, especially into overseas markets, it automatically introduces cultural differences, sometimes profound ones that need really careful and intentional management to avoid friction.
And another, maybe more dramatic, trigger for cultural clashes is mergers and acquisitions. We've all seen headlines about deals failing or really struggling post-acquisition. I suspect culture is often the silent killer there.
Oh, it absolutely is. This is a classic and often devastating scenario. When companies with fundamentally different cultures try to combine, imagine a nimble little startup merging with a huge bureaucratic conglomerate. Employees from both sides often resist the new or imposed culture. The real insight here, I think, isn't just that the cultures clash, but that the speed of cultural integration is often way more critical than the legal or financial integration. Companies frequently fail because they treat culture like an afterthought, not the foundational element it really is. Outcomes can vary, sure. Sometimes one dominant culture prevails, sometimes a hybrid develops. But too often, if that integration fails, it leads to continuous conflict, plummeting morale, and frankly, alarmingly high employee turnover.
And finally, leadership changes. These can profoundly impact culture, often creating a clash. This seems like a constant in the business world, doesn't it?
It's pretty much unavoidable, and leaders just have an enormous influence on organizational values. A new leader often brings a different philosophy, a new set of values, maybe unspoken ones, which can drastically shift the culture. Imagine moving from a very participative, open environment to suddenly a more authoritarian one, or vice versa. This can cause significant friction if it's not handled with immense care and transparency because long-standing norms are suddenly being challenged.
And the consequences of these cultural clashes, they can be pretty severe, can't they? Our sources list things like reduced employee motivation, increased conflict between departments or groups, and just general inefficiency as resources get wasted dealing with internal friction.
Indeed. And we also frequently see high staff turnover. as valuable employees simply choose to leave because they're dissatisfied with the new environment. Decision-making can slow down significantly as different groups resist or misunderstand each other or simply can't agree on the direction forward. And in the long run, it can even cause severe damage to the company's brand and reputation, particularly during those highly publicized failed mergers or maybe internal scandals linked to a toxic work environment. This really raises an important question for you, our listener. Have you ever personally felt the friction of a cultural clash? Perhaps when a new manager arrived or your company went through a big change? The impact can be truly profound, making or breaking an organization.
So, after exploring all these facets of culture, what does this all mean for leadership then? How much power do leaders truly wield in shaping, maintaining, and maybe even shifting something as ingrained as culture?
Leaders play an absolutely crucial role, arguably the most crucial role. They aren't just managers, they're often the primary role models, the storytellers, the ones who enforce the norms. Their behavior, their decisions, how they communicate it all powerfully defines organizational norms and expectations, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously. Leadership styles, whether they're autocratic, democratic, laissez-faire, they directly influence whether a culture becomes trust-based and innovative or controlling and stagnant. The most effective leaders, I think, are those who can balance the need for tradition and stability with the imperative for flexibility and adaptability, especially during times of change. In essence, a change in leadership isn't just a personnel shift. It often represents a really profound cultural turning point for an organization. It can set a completely new trajectory for its personality.
Wow, what a deep dive. We've really peeled back the layers of organizational culture today, from its very definition as that unwritten rule book to the compelling benefits of a strong one, and of course, the pitfalls of a weak one. We broke down the norm mess that shape it. Remember, that's the nature of the business, organizational structure, rewards, management styles, and sanctions. Then we explored Charles Handy's fascinating Gods of Management framework, the power, role, task, and person cultures. Those offer such vivid archetypes, don't they?
They really do.
We also dug into the causes and the profound consequences of cultural clashes and culture gaps. And finally, the undeniable, almost architectural impact of leadership on absolutely everything. These really feel like the key takeaways from our sources.
Yeah, and if we connect this all to the bigger picture, you now have, hopefully, a powerful lens to view any organization through. Whether it's your current workplace, or maybe a company you're researching for an interview, or even just the news headlines about a major corporate merger or a company struggling with internal issues. Understanding these underlying cultural dynamics helps you see beyond those surface-level decisions, doesn't it? To the deeper currents that drive an organization's success or failure, its resilience or its stagnation.
So for you, here's a final provocative thought to chew on as we wrap up. Consider how a seemingly small shift in just one of those norm SA factors, perhaps a new, more collaborative reward system, or maybe a conscious effort by a leader to empower teams rather than micromanage, could completely, almost imperceptibly at first, transform the entire personality of an organization, for better or for worse, over time. How do you see culture defining success in the organizations you encounter day to day? Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into organizational culture.